there, and welcome to this, the 15th episode of A Couple Takes on MS. Hi, I'm Dan Digman.
And hi, it's me, Jennifer Digman.
And we're A Couple Takes on MS. I'm walking.
I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. And truly, this time, we are moving forward alone.
Aww.
Well, just this is the first episode that we are recording without our faithful producer, Ryan, who usually is socially distant, and he's very distant today because we're doing this on our own.
Yes, we are distant, and as I joked to you earlier, the inmates are running the asylum. So all of you out there in listener land, be patient with us, and we're doing our best.
Yeah, exactly. And what we're talking about today, and this is a very special day for us, or special time, because this marks, it was 10 years ago that we released our book, Despite MS, to Spite MS. And that is the book that we had developed. And it's been a whole decade, dude.
Isn't that unbelievable? Well, I mean, it's been a decade, but more importantly, or not more importantly, but interestingly enough, September 10th, we celebrated our 16-year anniversary. So we got married. We started a blog, and we wrote a book. So I think that no wonder we're tired all the time. Oh, yeah, and we have multiple sclerosis.
Yes, yes, we do. So we will talk about, this isn't going to be a rehash and the best of the best, and this is our book, blah, 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 but it's just more about books and MS. And with this, too, we will read a couple of our favorite essays from said book. And we will get to that soon, but let's take a quick minute, as we usually do, is just kind of catch up. And obviously, we're catching up with you, the listeners. I mean, it was a pretty huge week this week for us, in that we had the incredible opportunity to virtually speak to a class of students, almost 170 students, at the Ohio State University. And it was for Neuro 4100, Basic and Clinical Perspectives of Disease.
And it was an amazing opportunity, and we were able to do it. Hello, it's so 2020-21. We were able to zoom into this class of fantastic students, and Dr. G, the professor, invited us to share our stories about not only our diagnosis, but how we've gone on living, because that is possible, and that is something that we really wanted to drive home to the students, that even after receiving a diagnosis for a chronic illness, life carries on. And as Dan said that day, we really both, he and myself, didn't start living until we met each other. So I think that was the crux of our presentation. Just how life moves on after a chronic illness diagnosis.
And I think it was very encouraging for me, I think for you too, but just how you see, I mean, the students, and Dr. G sent some great questions that the students came up with before our presentation, just so we could develop some responses or new and work those into our presentation. But I think it's just very encouraging what the students are looking for. I mean, encouraging for me as somebody living with multiple sclerosis, that these are the questions that the students are asking. They're very inquisitive, very engaged. And that was...
And I think what was encouraging as well is that these all were students going into the field of health professions in some capacity. They wanted to help people living with chronic illness, whether it be as doctors or therapists. I mean, it was just a really engaging, interesting group of young minds. So it was a pretty amazing experience. And I know you, Dan, you felt like me, like, wow, we got diagnosed with a chronic illness and we get to have this opportunity. So it was pretty fantastic.
And I think that's for everybody out there listening, living with multiple sclerosis. It is. Share your story. I think it's just like, otherwise, you know, and look for the opportunities and connect with universities, schools, everything within your area, just to say, you know, we have these perspectives, because otherwise students are learning and they're just learning the book work and they're learning caring for the patient, but they need to know, understand, and see the patient when they're treating them.
Have an actual person attached to the condition. And that, you know, just like with MS, there are nearly a million people living with this disease in the United States. And the likelihood that these students, if they don't already know someone in their circle of friends or their family living with the disease, they will be that much more open and receptive when they meet someone. So I just think it was an incredible opportunity.
It really was. And so again, we thank Dr. G and all of the students down at the Ohio State University's Neuro 4100 class for welcoming us into their classroom and staying engaged and connected with us after the fact. And so very promising. And thank you to all of them.
So Dan and I thank the students at the Ohio State University and that class that we had the opportunity to interact with and talk to. Thank you for your fantastic questions and your super kind statements. After our presentation, it was really rewarding, and it was a great experience. Speaking of great experience, as you alluded to earlier, Dan, we're going to read some of the excerpts from our book and talk about the book writing process, and we will do that right after this quick break.
Welcome back, and this is, again, exciting and unbelievable that it's been 10 years since we released our book, Despite MS, to Spite MS, and that was a labor of love, and I think it's just something where what's exciting about this is just, you know, getting our voices out there, getting it in hands of people so they can read it, understand it at those moments in time. And Jennifer, you had stats or something that were really kind of blew me away about this and multiple sclerosis books.
When we wrote the book 10 years ago, I just did a quick search on Amazon, because 10 years ago, that was the best resource for getting a tangible book. And I searched multiple sclerosis in the book section of Amazon, and there were 2,100 titles. And that was 10 years ago. And now I searched Amazon for books about multiple sclerosis, and there were over 6,800 books. And I think that's really exciting. And it's proof that there is a need. We need information about the disease. We need to share our stories. We need to share diets, exercise, things about medication. You know, why did you want to write a book, Dan?
Well, isn't it every writer and author's dream and wish and idea is to actually write a book? And so as a writer, that's what you want. You have something tangible in your hand. But I wanted to get that. I just think of like when I was newly diagnosed, how much I wanted to have something to read or to feel, to understand perspectives in living with the disease. And so I wanted to share my perspectives, my experiences with potential readers, just to make them, you know, obviously for anybody living with multiple sclerosis, but especially for the newly diagnosed, because at that point in time, I had only been 10 years in, but I mean.
Yeah, but that's a quick 10 years, and you had been thinking about it for quite some time. And so, you know, when you presented the idea of let's write a book, I was overwhelmed by the thought.
I was going to say, why did you want to write a book there, Jenny D?
Well, it's funny that you say this right now, because we had just talked to the students at Ohio State, and I had a memory that when I was diagnosed, my neurologist handed me a book. I got a diagnosis, and within the half hour since diagnosing me, he handed me a book and he said, don't read this, but I want you to have this. Oh, okay, why would you give me a gift you don't want me to read? So, of course, I went home, read it cover to cover, cried the entire way, because it was about symptom management and I didn't know anything about the disease. and just the potential course that the disease could take. And I cried, like I said, the whole way because I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have all of these problems I didn't understand about the disease. And it was horrible. So when you presented me with the idea of writing a book, I thought, what would I want to read? What would you want to read? So when we put together some of our essays and thoughts, and they're not Pollyanna in any sense. I mean, we deal with some poopy stuff because that's the nature of multiple sclerosis. But I think it puts a positive or a realistic spin. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that that's where, because that's really a lot of where our writing comes from. And it's not sugarcoating the disease. It's like talking about the realities. But we, in our way of moving forward, is finding shiny moments, finding silver linings. And sometimes it's really, really, really dark, but you at least find the silver linings to make it better. And I think that's what I wanted to do with our book. And it's a collection of essays. I feel it's a lot like a Chicken Soup for the Soul kind of series where you don't have to feel like you're engaged for 200 pages and like part of a continuing narrative. It's like you can pick the book up and open to any page and feel like you're involved right there. You didn't need to read the first 150 pages to understand the essay at page 160.
And because I love you, Dan, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, but it's the truth. You're a writer, and so you're around words all day. And the last thing you want to do when you get out of work is read. And so you've had books in the past. I've seen a Springsteen book sitting on our nightstand that has gone unread for a long time. And I remember when you were a graduate student and you had to read Uncle Tom's Cabin. And thank God for audiobooks. But to read a book from start to finish, that's not your ball of wax. You're just, no. And to have a book where you can, like you said, pick it up at any page and read something that we hope will be insightful about living with the disease and how you can better handle the diagnosis. But because it is 10 years old, back in those days, there were, what, 3 treatments to alter the course, the progression, the severity of your disease. And now there's over 20. Yeah. So you would think we should write another book. So hot question for you, Dan Dickman. Why haven't we written another book?
I think once you self-publish and you live that method, you know how much work it takes. I mean, there's a lot of work in pulling the essays together, writing said essays, getting that all done, and then the editing and doing and printing and design and, you know, just everything. And then if you're self-publishing, you've got to be a hustler and you've got to be pushing and putting things out there and getting them in bookstores. I think the one thing that I, looking back, wish I would have, we would have done, obviously make an audiobook so people could do it. But again, you're paying to print all these books. I wanted to sell the print copies before I did anything digitally. But I do think that if we did another book, I would also want to, and I'll drop a great book. It's Enjoying the Ride by Mitch Sturgeon. That was expertly done because it was a series of essays, but it also carried through a narrative. It wasn't just like, it just didn't feel like chapters. So I would love to have a book like that. But what worked with for us was Mitch did an audio book. And so we could listen. I think that was so engaging that you could have the author reading the book and you felt like you were just sitting down at the table hearing him tell the story.
And just to fill you in listener land, Mitch also is living with multiple sclerosis. So his audio book really hit us, you know, at our, where we live in being diagnosed with MS. So we would encourage you to check it out. And so that's a good point, Dan, that the audiobooks would be a great way if we decided to reach out and break the curse of a sophomore slump to try and write another book. Part of the reason I am a little hesitant It's not a big thing because if you do an audiobook, whatever, well, you'll need a cover. And our podcast producer, the wonderful Ryan, he is the photographer that took the picture on our cover. And that is such a priceless photo. And we're just going to have to get Ryan to take another one.
Take just some sort of impromptu, knowing he's taking a picture of a shot.
Yeah, so that's pressure for the cover, and then it's pressure for what would we say. But it's something to think about. And
I don't want to say right here for this, the 15th episode of our podcast, to say, by gum, we're going to write that book, Jenny. I don't know when and how that'll happen, but I guess we've got, I think for me, you know, writing that first book, I mean, I took a hiatus from grad school because I had thought that if I was going to be staying up till 2-3 in the morning writing a 20-page paper for a grade, I could be spending that time writing a book for us. And so that's when I said, okay, and that gave me the drive. So maybe, but we would do audiobook and ebook and print copy. And, you know, there's a lot of investigating, but we've got to be real about that.
Again, we're living with multiple sclerosis. So I think we promised everyone out there that we're going to share a couple excerpts. So why don't we go grab our books and get ready to read. That'll give us an idea if audiobook is even something we want to do. So
we will be back with reading a couple essays from our book that was published 10 years ago. Be right back. So welcome back. And wow. So this will be our first experimentation on whether an audiobook is even in our future. Come on, Jennifer, let's see how you are, because this will be your essay of choice from the first book we ever published, Despite MS, Despite MS, which would have been around 10 years ago this month. So take it away.
Okay, the essay I'm choosing to read is He Warned Me. 7 years ago, my neurologist at the time reluctantly gave me a prescription for a wheelchair. Quote, when I give patients this, they almost never walk again, he told me. But doctor, I said, I plan on walking for a long time. Don't worry. It's just that right now I'm so tired, and I'm especially tired of falling down. And lately, I've been missing out on so much. You understand that, right? I was naively asking a middle-aged doctor to sympathize for the lost social life of a 27-year-old woman. Besides, a wheelchair is just another way to get around. It's not like I'm planning to use it every day. It'll only be for navigating long distances, like parking lots at concerts or ball games. Maybe lengthy shopping trips even. But it's only for convenience. You know, conserve my energy. He listened quite patiently, but he still had his doubts. I just couldn't understand why he was so opposed to me owning my own wheelchair. After all, didn't he want me to be comfortable, or at least safe? In those 7 years since that conversation, I have come to understand his reluctance. He was opposed because he knew my short-term reasons were overlooking the long-term realities of life in a wheelchair. When I began using my chair, I wanted to believe that I had outsmarted and proven him wrong. After all, I was walking 80% of the time and wheeling the other 20%. Not a bad arrangement, I thought. But over time, the balance subtly shifted. I missed the slow development of my reliance on the wheelchair because I was so impressed by how much I could accomplish when using it. Look at me go, I remember thinking. The disease is no match for me. Ah, silly, silly me. Sadly, I realize now that unused muscles atrophy, despite regular and intense physical therapy to strengthen my weakened muscles, I remained comfortable and safe from falls. And as I depended more and more on my chair, and my weakened, unused muscles led to pain, and nobody likes pain, especially me. So my chair kept the pain at bay. It really is a vicious cycle. Sometimes I think the worst thing about my multiple sclerosis is that the disease has left me completely dependent on a wheelchair. But in reality, the absolute worst part of my MS is the almost constant guilt I live with. I often feel as though I gave up. Really, especially during my irrational, emotional moments. Be honest, we all have them, MS or not. Unfortunately, I carry this guilt, frustration, and sadness with me. Yes, I try to stuff it down, silence it, but it's almost always there. However, in a logical frame of mind, I know that it was this chronic disease that took away my ability to walk. It's just so easy to feel guilty or sorry for myself. And I understand now why my neurologist was so opposed to writing that prescription. Okay, I've learned my lesson. Joke's over. I think I'll start walking again. Can I have my do-over now? Unfortunately, life doesn't work like that. In her book, On Death and Dying, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross writes about the five stages of death, which are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Almost daily, I deal with my MS by angrily bargaining with God. Fruitless, I know. Life just doesn't work like that. But I try to accept the death of my ability to walk. In doing that, I realize I'm far too accepting of the death of my walking. Life just shouldn't work like that. Isn't giving up hope of walking just plain giving up? I'm not giving up to anyone. Anything, especially MS. Starting today, I'm making a conscious choice to reclaim the possibility of walking. I know it is going to be difficult and frustrating, but while it may not happen, I'm realizing that I'll die before I accept that I will never walk again.
Wow. How was that reading after that? That was tough.
That was tough. Tough for a lot of reasons. I think having an audiobook, that would be challenging. But then to read a story from 10 years ago that is so my life right now. I haven't walked in that 10-year period.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it would be easy to do, but so much other stuff gets in the way. But I think that's going to inspire me.
Yeah.
So I think it's good. I think it was good. And I hope, yeah. And wow. It gave me something to think about.
So gave now, me something to think about too.
Now, Dan Digman, it's your turn.
But really though, thanks for sharing that. Thanks for reading that one.
Thank you. I'm excited to hear what you're going to read.
I'm so predictable. Well, this is and forever will be my favorite essay from the book, and I guess given celebrating 16 years of being married to one Jennifer Digman, I was like, sure, why not? Okay. Blessings counted, even in the bathroom. It was early in the morning, and I was ready to leave for work. A travel mug of black coffee in my left hand, car keys in my right. Jennifer rolled down the hallway and asked, "Hey Dan, Would you have time to help me go to the bathroom one more time before you leave? And so I stopped, set my coffee and keys on the floor next to my briefcase, and met her in the bathroom. As we prepared to make the transfer from her power wheelchair, Jennifer looked up at me and asked, "Do you ever get tired of me always asking you to help me go to the bathroom and all the other stuff you do to help me?" It certainly wasn't the first time she asked me such a question, but this time I had a more descript response than my standard reply of, "Never. Do you ever get tired of all the stuff you do to help me?" I then knelt down to get eye level with Jennifer and asked her if she remembered the time back in 2002, just after we started dating, that I drove back to Iowa by myself for Thanksgiving. And so, there in the bathroom, I shared with Jennifer what had consumed my mind for that 18-hour round-trip drive to Monticello, Iowa, and back to Mount Pleasant, Michigan, some 7 years ago. Imagine that, a tender moment in the bathroom. I told Jennifer that for the entire trip, I searched for answers to my questions of whether such a relationship could work between two people with MS. Was I going to be strong enough to care for her as well as for myself? Was she going to be strong enough to care for me as well as herself? I threw around the reality that she no longer could walk, and Lord knows how my disease was going to treat me in the future. It was early enough in our relationship that I think we could have mutually agreed a marriage likely could prove to be more than either of us could handle, and MS would force us to just be friends. When I returned from Iowa, I had made my decision, and unless Jennifer felt otherwise, I wasn't happy with just being friends. Fast forward to 2009, and it was at that moment in the bathroom that I fully realized I'm living the answers to the questions and prayers I had contemplated on that trip to the Hawkeye State. I told Jennifer, on that trip to Iowa, this is what I had prayed for. That one day I'd be so blessed as to have you as my wife, and we both would be healthy enough that I would be the caregiver for you and you for me, and we didn't let MS prevent us from being happy together. So no, Jennifer, I don't mind at all. This is what I had prayed for.
Wow.
How'd I get through that without getting all like
teary-eyed? I think we're older. Maybe you're a little less sleep deprived than when you normally
we're older,
read it.
But I love you just the same.
And I love you. And that was sweet. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
That was a tender moment in a podcast. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, absolutely. No, wow. So I don't know, we could do an audiobook.
We could. We have a lot of new adventures and experiences to share. But that's multiple sclerosis, and maybe this will light a fire under our fingers and we'll get to writing. But when and if we do, those of you out in listener land, you'll be privy as soon as we get started.
Absolutely. So thanks for listening to our excerpts from our book. And usually we would break for a moment, but I think we could jump right into the moments of joy because I think we both share the same one. And we've talked about this for probably the last 5 episodes of the podcast. So Jennifer, what is our moment of joy?
Our kitchen is done.
6 months in the making, dude.
And it's so beautiful and so accessible, and everything is where it should be. And just when you cook, Dan, I mean, things are at your fingers. You know, the layout of our kitchen didn't change dramatically. It's just a little more smartly. Things are put away, and we have food in the kitchen where it should be, so you don't have to walk out into the hallway to get things that you need to cook. And we have new, it's so nice. And that's joyful for me. How about for you?
I mean, it's totally joyful just that everything is done and that the kitchen is done, the living room is done, and we can just finally start settling back in and going on to other things.
And it's proof positive that good things come to those who wait. So we did wait, and We watched a football game on the TV.
We did.
And that was fantastic. And we made popcorn that we didn't eat in the TV room because our carpet is so pretty. But it was just, I mean, it's pretty exciting. So that for me was a moment of joy. And it's fun. And it's, well, yours too.
My moment of joy. Yes, it was great. So thank you all for listening again. And hopefully this, even though Ryan wasn't here to do the engineering and stuff, he is producing, so we'll put it together. So hopefully Ryan will make us sound efficient and smart. And
we look forward to him being back in the vicinity with us. But this was a good test to see if the inmates could run the asylum. So Ryan, we look forward to you being back with us. And so this is the 15th episode of A Couple Takes on MS. I'm Jennifer Digman.
And I'm Dan Digman. And I'm walking.
And I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. Take care.